So welcome to this session on SharePoint 2010 Patterns and Practices. I'm Sergio Luca. I'm SharePoint MVP and trainer and consultant for DevoTeam Belgium. But today I'm speaking for the CLUG, which is the Continual Learning User Group, a user group based in Brussels. And in this user group, we focus on different kind of technology. Well, basically, we focus on the Microsoft ecosystem. So on developer stuff, IT pro stuff, and also methodological stuff, for instance. So we organize a session once a month. I think it's on Wednesday, I think. Something like this, yeah. Okay. And all the sessions take place in Sint-Lambert, Woluwe, in the EFEC premises. So the EFEC is École Pratique des Hautes Études Commerciales. So here are different topics in this session. First, I will give you an introduction to SharePoint Pattern and Practice Guidance, the SPG. Next, I will illustrate the main patterns covered by the SPG, and we'll focus on the unit testing with a tool for Microsoft Research, PEX and MOLS, and then conclusion. So who in the room has used the SPG, the Pattern and Practice? Has anybody use that? Who know what the SPG is? One person? Two person? Okay, so you are in a good place. That's a good session, I think. So the SPG is a project set up by Microsoft and other partners on MSDN and on Codeplex. And this project provides guidance and documentation on SharePoint 2010. A set of patterns, and more important, the reference implementation of these patterns, a reusable library, so libraries that you can make use of in your own code, in your own application. For instance, we are using these libraries in a very important SharePoint project, which is the ing.be website, which indeed is based on SharePoint, for instance. There are a set of discussion lists and hands-on lab. So now the SharePoint pattern and practice is part of MSDN, so it's kind of official implementation. So that's important for Microsoft. And the SPG focuses on the following challenge that we face when we create SharePoint and enterprise application. First is testability. How can we isolate all classes? Flexibility. How can we update and replace code without recompiling the application? Configuration, so in any application you need to be able to store configuration settings somewhere. So are you going to store that in web config file or in SharePoint database or in other places? And does that scale? Logging and exception handling as well. So how do we log exception and errors in our application? And do we have a consistent approach across the team to do that? So the SPG provide logging code to do that. Maintainability, so how can you maintain code which is always changing and evolving. And that's very important for me is today you need to make sure that your code can run in the cloud. So in a couple of days, Microsoft will release Office 365, which provides SharePoint in the cloud, SharePoint Online, Link, Exchange, etc. So that's going to be very important. So you need to make sure that today your code could potentially work in the cloud in the future. Okay? That's important. So all the examples I will show you were in the cloud anyway. So in the SPG, we have patterns, .NET patterns, SharePoint patterns. So I will cover some of these important patterns that you might know. So the patterns cover in the SPG and cover and illustrate it with an application that we'll show, that I will show you are the following. First, we have the service locator pattern. Next, the MVP pattern, model view presenter pattern. Repository pattern and the model, the MVVM pattern, which is the model view view model pattern. Okay, so you'll find example of code in SharePoint in the SPG to do this kind of pattern. So first, let's focus on the first pattern, the service locator pattern, which is a kind of inversion of control pattern. What is that? Well, we usually have the following problem. Here we have a class A, for instance, that make use of other classes like class A use service A and class A use service B. We have a high coupling between class A and service A and B. So for instance, if we want to replace in our application service A with another class, well, we need to change our code in several places, many places, and that could be troublesome. Okay, for instance, if you want to replace one specific class with a mocking class for testing, you should be able to easily do that. Okay, so instead of having high coupling between your classes, you need to do that. You need to do this. So, and for instance, that's the service locator pattern illustrated in SPG. We have a class A that instead of using directly service A and service B, this class will ask an intermediate class, which is the locator, to find the dedicated class. For instance, the class A will say, hey, I would like to make use of the class that implement the following interface. So you can configure that in your whole application somewhere, so I will illustrate that. And if you want to achieve this service locator pattern, there are basically two ways in SharePoint. The first is the SPG service locator, as I will illustrate in a couple of minutes. And the next one is the MEF, the Microsoft .NET Extensibility Framework. Has anybody used the MEF here? Okay, have you tried that in SharePoint? Not yet. Okay, good luck. But I will illustrate the SPG service locator first. So let's go to it. And what I want to show you is this. So I have a very, very simple example here. I have a web part with two buttons. When I click on this button, I'm going to call a service. And that doesn't use a service locator pattern. And when I click here, this one will call a service that makes use of service locator. So how does that work with a very simple example? So let's go. Let's try to find my demos. Okay, so here we are. It's a SharePoint project with a web part. Let's move to design mode. And the class is the following, very, very simple class. My toolbox that implement an interface, iMyToolbox, and iMyToolbox provide a function that takes two numbers and return a string. So add two numbers and return a string. So very, very simple. And without using service locator, obviously you get something like this. Can you read the code in the back of the room? Yes, okay. So you do this, my new toolbox, you call a function, you get the result. But if you want to use service locator, you can do this. Call a class provided by the SPG and say, I want to use service locator. So get current. You get a pointer to the service locator. And then you can say, hey, I would like to get an instance of the class that implement iMyToolbox. So somewhere you need to specify that the following class, and you can have several classes, implement this interface. And then you get a pointer to the interface and you can make use of it. Okay, so you're not, if you want to change a class that implement an interface, you just can replace it in a central place. In a central place, so how can we define the association between this and the class? Well, first, you need to, of course, reference some SharePoint practice and guidance DLL here. And next, we use a feature receiver. So in the feature, SharePoint feature receiver, you'll get the following code. First, you call the SharePoint service locator. I want to use SharePoint service locator. And then you will call a type mapping service, so service locator configuration. This is a service that allows you to store configuration settings in your SharePoint farm. And then you can say this. I want to associate this interface with this class. So anytime you will ask for this interface, this class will be, an instance of this class will be created and returned. Okay? And if you want your code to run in the sandbox, in the cloud, you need to specify this. So the feature, property feature parent, must be an SP site, which is a site collection. Okay? If you don't run this in a sandbox, you can choose, so you can store your configuration settings in different places. You can store that in the farm level, so for every web application by web application, site collection, or site by site. And the setting is stored in property bags in the configuration database. Okay, so you don't change any configuration files. And it scales, because all the settings are copied on a cache on every web front end. So that works very fast. Okay. So this illustrates the first pattern, service locator pattern. The next very important pattern that we use in many, many platforms, many, many languages, is the MVP pattern. So the model view view presenter pattern. Like most patterns, this pattern provides a kind of separation of concern. So we separate code in different roles. The view is usually the user interface, for instance, a web part, a user control, a custom field, or an application page or a site page. And we have a mediator, which is the presenter. So the presenter will communicate with the back office. Back office is the model. And the presenter will have a pointer to the view. So the presenter will put data in the view, but just through a pointer to an interface. So this is an interface, right? So when the view will be created, for instance, a web part, the view will create an instance of a presenter. The presenter will communicate with the model, the service, the back office, and then the presenter will put the information, the data, into the view. Okay. It's good if all your developers follow this, this pattern. Let's take a look at an example in SharePoint. The example, so if you install the SPG, the example I recommend is the following, is the execution model sandbox. Let's take a look at this one. So first, I will show you the application, which is very, very basic. Sandbox. And then I will show the code. So in the sandbox, we have three websites in SharePoint. So one home site that display a web part. And we have child site, construction, and maintenance. If each child site has a list, dedicated list, so here, list is this one, estimates, okay, using content types. And this home site, well, this web part on the home site, aggregate information from different lists and aggregate them right here. So basically, it's not technically complicated, but what I want to show is how to do that by following the MVP pattern. So first, if you go to the SPG documentation, the SPG, the pattern and practice is very, very interesting. You learn a lot of things. Even expert developers will learn a lot of things. You'll find description of this somewhere here. I think it's the sandbox. Execution model is this one. So you'll get a description of the application itself. So we have different sites. This is the home site, root site, and two child sites, construction team site here. So maintenance team site and construction team site. With two lists, estimate list here on both sites. Both lists are based on the same content type. With a side column that make a lookup to a list of project, which is in the root website. So now we can easily do that in 2010, in Camel, for instance. And here we have the aggregate view web part. Okay, that's the big picture. Now, if you take a look at the class design, you'll find something like this. And I will show you the code afterward. So here, we have one class, aggregate view, derived from a web part. This class implement an interface that I will show you, that I will illustrate here. And this class, aggregate view, is made of one presenter. Okay, the presenter will have a pointer to the interface that point to the class, to the web part here. And the presenter will be made of a pointer to a service, the service that will bring data. So the presenter will ask for data, the service will bring data, and the aggregate view presenter will put data into the view through this interface. Okay, that's a very common pattern. I will illustrate this. So where is this application in the SPG? So when you install the SPG, you'll find that down here, source, execution model, and sandbox is this one. Yes. Both, all projects in the SPG come with a test version and a non-test version. So if you want to learn how to create test application in SharePoint, that's a good place. So let's grab the non-test version. So my MVP pattern. So first, I have my view here, aggregate view. It's a web part. here, implement an interface, aggregate view, which is I aggregate view, which is this one, very, very simple. In this web part, in this interface, we have one property, set site data, which is a data table. And we have a grid view, of course, because if you want your code to run in the sandbox, you cannot use SP grid view. You need to use grid view. That's a limitation in the sandbox. And when you create the web part, in the create child control, you will instantiate the presenter. So here, you create the presenter. So you instantiate the presenter. And you provide a pointer to the web part, to the view. So you get a pointer to the interface. And you can also instantiate the service you want to use. I'm not sure this is the correct, the good practice. But anyway, if you take a look at the view presenter, or the presenter, you'll find that here. So that's my presenter. And you get a pointer to a view, get a pointer to the service, and then you call set site data and you put the data, you grab the data from the service and you put that in the view by using the interface. Okay, that's a common pattern. You'll find a lot of interesting stuff in this example, so how to manage exception, etc. So this is illustrated as well. I don't have the time to cover that. But many, many developers follow this pattern right now. Okay. So the next very important pattern that most developers must follow is the repository pattern. So what is that? Again, we follow the good practice in development, which is here you have your client business logic. So the client could be a SharePoint page, a web part, a custom field, whatever. And the client needs to grab information from the SharePoint list or update information to the back office. So the back office could be a set of SharePoint lists or other kind of storage, database, Azure, or whatever. So then you need to create a wrapper that encapsulates your back office, of course. And that's basically what the repository pattern is all about. And you need to exchange business entities between the client and the repository. And then when you grab information, you will grab data and you will return business entity. You will move that to your client, SharePoint client. Okay? Well, it's obvious, but I find that in many places people directly call camel code directly from the client side code, from the client, from the caller, from web part, from custom field, etc. So I see camel code directly here. So that's not a good practice. So there are two questions here. First, how do we do this? How do we create that? So I will illustrate that in the demo. And what kind of technology do we have to use if we want to communicate with the back office? So two questions. So what kind of technology do we need to use to communicate with the back office? It's illustrated in this slide. So in this slide summarizes the different data access technology in SharePoint 2010, more complex than in SharePoint 2007. So depending on where you want your code to run, on client side or on server side, so for instance here, that's server side. So on server side, you can use a server object model to manipulate data in SharePoint 2007. As you see the extension of this line, you can do everything with the server object model. Okay, so we can do everything, but the server object model is weakly typed, so error prone. Okay, so now in SharePoint 2010, we have link to SharePoint, which provides a nice abstraction on top of your SharePoint list. No? And link to SharePoint is strongly typed, so the recommendation is to use link to SharePoint. Okay, but link to SharePoint doesn't cover the whole API, of course. It's mainly a data access API. So we recommend link to SharePoint. On client side, and we'll use more code on the more client side code in the sandbox in the cloud. We have two choices: client object model, which allow you to do everything. You see the extension of this line; you can do everything, but it's weakly typed. Or you can use a strongly typed API, which is the REST API. So the REST API is very nice, well defined. Mike's the SharePoint team is very proud of it, but there is one concern with that. You cannot use it on anonymous website. So forget that for public website. Okay? You can use link to SharePoint on public website. You couldn't use that on public on anonymous website in the when the release came off, but now with a new cumulative update you can use that on anonymous site. So I recommend that. Of course, when you use a data access technology in SharePoint, don't forget that caching is super, super important in SharePoint. So let's illustrate an example of a repository pattern. And to do that, I will show you, for instance, first a data model. So the data model, I think, is this one. Try to find that in the documentation. Where is it? Yes, it's here. Yeah. So we have the following data model. I apologize, it's kind of small here. I can try to zoom. Does that work? Yeah. Okay, so here we have an important, well, not an important, we have a kind of complex data model where we have different SharePoint lists. For instance, we have a parts. So a parts is used by one or several machines. So you see here between parts and machines. So each rectangle here is a SharePoint list. So each part can be used in one or several machines. So we have many-to-many here. Each part can be used or can be provided by one or several suppliers. So we have many-to-many as well here. One part can be stored in one or several part locations. So it's a one-to-many, etc., etc. So this is a kind of complex list. And in the SPG, they show you how to manage that, how to implement an application on top of this. For instance, how can you implement many-to-many in SharePoint? Okay. And how can you have reverse lookup, lookup between one table to the others? For instance, when you have one part, you need to be able to find all the inventory location. But when you have an inventory location, you need to be able to find all the parts in this inventory. So they explain how to do that, of course, by using Link to SharePoint, among others. And I will illustrate an application that implements this. And the reference application is this one. In the data model, you'll find SharePoint list. So that's this project. Let's try to grab the project here. Data model is this one, SharePoint list. So two versions of the solution, one with test and one without test. And the application looks like this. Let's go to here, repository. The sample application that allows you to manage part, machine, manufacturer, supplier, inventory. For instance, if I take a look at this, so I type, I want to find information about, I think it's MN0, machine 0. So the system return information about this machine. And when you click on show part, you will find the different parts associated with this machine. Okay, so we have two parts here. So you can click on machine, you can click on supplier, location, you can edit, you can delete every item, etc. But what is important here is not the application itself, is how the best practice they follow to achieve that, to do that. And in my case, I want to illustrate the repository pattern. So we have different projects in this solution, and usually we have one project called model. So in the model project, you will put your content type definition, so your database structure, your SharePoint list structure, etc. So content type, or site fields, etc. So all the content type are defined here. Well, for information, most example implement site colon in CAML, but content type with code, because that's more flexible if you want to upgrade content type, which is a common challenge in SharePoint developers. So here, in this project, in the model project, we have this code, so part site. So part site is code generated by, well, code based on Link to SharePoint, and generated by a tool called SPMetal. Who's using SPMetal here? Okay, who like SPMetal? Who has never heard of SPMetal? Okay, so with SPMetal, you just define your SharePoint list with different columns, and you generate code. And the kind of code is this one, for instance, here. So we have a data context, which is very similar to what we have in Link. So we have a central class, data context. And for each list in your website, you'll get a properties. A property. So for instance, I have a department property that point to the department list, etc. So machine and so on, parts, parts supplies, etc. So this is automatically generated. And for instance, if you go to machines, you have code that allow you to return here list of machine, and link to SharePoint also generate each business entity. So for instance, machine, so one machine, so one item in the list is a machine, so you have an abstraction on top of this machine. So this is automatically generated by link by SPMetal. So SPMetal generate link to SharePoint code. Okay? So that's very interesting, very easy to make use of. But you need an abstraction on top of this. And that's what the repository pattern is all about. So we need an abstraction on top of this, because in your project you might use link to SharePoint for some part, but you can also directly use CAML. Link to SharePoint, generate CAML, send CAML instruction, so it's a wrapper around CAML. But sometimes it's better to use CAML, especially, if, for instance, if you have a lot of update to do, if you want to update 10,000 records in a SharePoint list, which you're not supposed to do, but anyway, then link to SharePoint is quite slow to do that. So you need to rely on CAML. So in your application, you have a mixture of both technologies, CAML and link to SharePoint and others. So this is illustrated here in another project, in the same solution here. For instance, if I get here, Sandbox, you will find the pattern implementation. So we have a class, part management repository, that implement an interface. So the interface is interesting. Let's get there. So in this interface, you get the following action. So get supplier, delete machine part, etc. So all the action that need to be done on the SharePoint list are defined in this interface. So the implementation looks like this in the class. So you have this. Most of the time, you do direct call to link to SharePoint. For instance, I will show an example here. Get department. I want the list of department. You directly call link to SharePoint. And you pass a Lambda expression. But sometime, I will try to find an example here, it's more complicated. We have the concept of DTO, data transfer object. I'll try to find an example. Yes, here, for instance. In my repository, I want to implement this. Get machine by department. You provide one department ID, and you call link to SharePoint. And in your link to SharePoint, you will create new classes. So for instance, you create a new instance of machine DTO. So that's your business entity, so the data transfer object. And the benefit of this is this. For instance, even if your SharePoint list, you have the following column, title, you can already say, you can replace this with your own custom column, machine name, for instance. And you will return list of enumerable of machine DTO, for instance. So don't forget this, the data transfer object in your repository. And you can also cache this kind of information wherever you want. Okay? So that's super, super important. Of course, you can use SPMetal to automatically generate link to SharePoint code. But sometimes you want to do the other way around. So for instance, you want to design your data structure. So you want to be able to design your content types. And from that, you want to generate code. And you want to be able to save to save your content type definition somewhere and to reuse that. So SPMetal doesn't provide that. If you want to do that, and I think that's a good practice, you need to use the following tool. It's linked to SharePoint DSL extension, which is a tool created and provided by a guy from Microsoft Consulting Service, so Olivier Carpentier. So with this tool, you can directly design your content type, your data structure, and you generate code from this. For instance, if I create a SharePoint project, I won't do the whole demo because of lack of time, but anyway. So you do this, and then you can say, I want to define first a content type, so use this. And that is free. You can download it for free from Microsoft website. link to SharePoint data model. So I want to create an empty model. Finish. So you have a designer that will show up. Like this. So this is the item content type. From item you have document, folder, etc. So you can create your own content type, an entity. You define the column you want to get in your content type. So first I want to create a content type car. The name is car. The source content type will be item, so you can derive a content type from another content type, of course. You can specify map properties. For instance, in my car, I want the following properties. Map properties, let's create a new property. Create a new map property. I want to define a model, which is a string, and I want to define a price, for instance. Okay, you can specify the internal name. So property name is model and internal name will be, where is it? Yes, here, internal name. You have a wider screen than mine. Huh? So you can do this and then you can, if you want, export to SharePoint definition. So your content type definition will be exported. And if you want, you can launch ASP.NET that will generate link to SharePoint classes. Okay, so I don't have the time to do the whole demo, but I recommend you this tool. Very nice, very interesting. And it's still based on ASP.NET if you want. The last pattern is the MVVM pattern, the Model View View Model pattern. So in this pattern, so this pattern is based on a technology. Well, usually pattern are in the technology independent, but this one is based on data binding. So to be able to achieve that, you need data binding. And basically, we have this. We have a view, which is a user interface, custom fields, web parts, page. You have a huge class, view model, that will bring information from the back office. The back office is the model here. So update and read will go through the model. You will bring your data in the view model, and you will data bind the view model to the view. And any change of the data in the view model will show up in the view. If you have any event in the view, this event should be redirected to the view model that will do the action on the model. So that's a well-known pattern. Many SharePoint developers don't follow this pattern. I don't know why. Usually we use this pattern in Silverlight and WPF application. Okay, but you know that the future is more towards HTML5. So, until recently, we couldn't use that in HTML and JavaScript. But now, you will see that there is a framework, an open source framework created by a guy who now works for Microsoft called Knockout. We've heard of Knockout? Use Knockout? You love it? Okay, nice. Okay, so first, let's illustrate this pattern. And to illustrate it, I will show you the following application. First, the application itself. The application is this one, client reference application. It's an application that runs on top of the data model I've illustrated before. And there are 7 flavors of this application. One using the client object model, one using the REST object model, one using Silverlight, the other using JavaScript, etc. So they have different implementations of the same thing. Example, if I take the Silverlight one, you'll get something like this. For instance, I want to get information about one part, part one, or a part starting having an ID starting with SKU 1. Click search. Behind the curtain, the system will call the REST API. So that different implementation, you can use a client object model or whatever, depending on the project you select. So we fetch all the SKU having an ID starting with SKU 1. When you select a part, it displays the list of providers and the inventory. So you can change inventory if you want. Okay. So all this stuff is based on the MVVM pattern. So I encourage you to take a look at this application. I will quickly show you how that works. So let's get there. So it's source. It's client. let's take this one. So this one is based on MVVM. So here we have the Silverlight application, the main page. Takes a while. So here we have the two data grid. Okay, two data grid. And more important here is this class, ViewModel. We will bind this class, and I will show this class, to this data grid. So for instance, if you select this data grid here, you will see that so it's this one, okay. In this data grid definition, you will have a item source attribute, which is, I want to bind to a class, I want to bind to a class that has a parts property, a list of parts. And this one will display the list of suppliers. So here I will bind that to a class which has a current part supplier. So when you select a part, it displays the current part. Okay. So, and the class that's going to be used in the Silverlight application data context is this one, because this one is the view model. So it's a huge class which provides implementation of this, for instance, parts, the parts property. That's return a list of parts item. And the suppliers, I think it was parts supplier or something like this. Yeah, current parts suppliers. Also return a list of suppliers item. And if you get back to the Silverlight application code, you will see that when you click on search here, you say, hey, so for instance, here in the main page, in the constructor, we instantiate the view model. We store the view model in the data context. And when you click on the button, we say, hey, I want to get the parts. So we call get parts in the view model. So the view model is a kind of front end for the front end, if you want. So the view model will communicate with the back office here, and we'll call get parts. Okay. In this case, in this implementation, they call the REST API. Okay. So usually the view model is a huge class that communicates with the back office, and we bind that to, for instance, Silverlight. Now, if you want to use SharePoint on public website, of course you need to use JavaScript and HTML, right? So Knockout, which is a new open source framework, JavaScript framework, provide data binding in JavaScript. How does that work? So I will quickly show you what Knockout is, and then I will show you an example in SharePoint. Knockout provide data binding, more than data binding. It provides rich client-side interactivity, provide MVVM pattern, provide support for most browser, including Internet Explorer 6, even Chrome. Support. So how does that work? Let's take a look at a very, very simple example. The example is the following here. It's an HTML page. I will show you the code. Where is it? Oh, yes. I need to open the pro. It's not a SharePoint example. I will show you the SharePoint example afterwards. So it's here. All the example will be provided on the website. So it's a simple HTML page. Well, it's an ASP page, but the code is in HTML. When you run this page, you should be able to do this. For instance, this is a span. This is an input in HTML, another span, another input. When you change that, you see data change automatically in the span. So. Okay, and this is just data binding. There's almost no JavaScript code behind this. And I will show you how that works. It's very, very simple. So here, this is my HTML code. A span, first name, input for the first name, span for the last name, input for the last name. And you need to import Knockout. Then you need to do this. You need to specify A here. I want to bind, that's new in Knockout, I want to bind this span with, I want to bind the text property of the span with the first name property of a view model. Huh? I want to bind the value property of this input with the first name. Same here, last name and last name for the input. Okay, so just create a JavaScript class. Let's call that view model. You put first name, last name, and you need to say, hey, I want two-way data binding between this property, and the rest of the world. Huh? Just specify KO and observable and provide a string or whatever. And then you do this KO apply binding, and you bind your view model. And that's it. And then you get data binding in your application as what you have in CLI. It must be simple, and it is very simple and robust. So that's all that works. If you want to use that in SharePoint, if you want to do something like this, so here I have a SharePoint list, very basic SharePoint list called cars. I haven't customized this list, one column, so with the following cars. If you want to display that here, you see, by using, for instance, the REST API, very simple, then you need to apply the MVVM pattern. So how does that work? So here I have a feature called knockout. I will show you the ASPX page. So that's an ASPX page using a SharePoint master page. Code is here. Just a minute. So here I have a table, an HTML table here. And in the table I have a header and a body. And here I can say this. I want to bind, that's knockout, I want to bind the body to a template. We also have template in knockout. So I want to bind to a template called car row template. And this is something provided here. TR, TR, TD, span. And here I use a data bind. So I data bind the span with an object that will I will data bind the text property of the span with an object that has an ID member. Same here, a title member. ID and title come from my SharePoint list. So what I need to do is this. Here, when my page load, I will call this function, which is defined here. I define a variable, let's call that view model. And in the view model definition, I will create, you see, I call this jQuery, so I will call that asynchronously. I will call the following JSON service here that will bring information from my list. It's a custom service. And here, when the service returns information back to SharePoint, I will put a property called cars, which is an array of list items. As simple as that. So then in the view model, you have a cars, which is an array of objects. And then if you get back to the template definition, or even not just the definition, if you get back to the body definition here, you see, I want a template to run. The template is car row template, so the template defined above. And I want to apply this template for each cars. That means you need to data bind an object that has a cars property. And we do that somewhere in the code. Here, you see? Knockout, apply binding, your view model. So the template will work. Okay? So it doesn't take a lot of line to do this kind of thing. And it's quite robust. And you have data binding as what you have in CLIte. Okay? No, you don't have any reason not to use the MVVM in public website. Okay, so next topic is unit testing with PECs and MOLES. So what's PECs and MOLES? Has anybody used PECs and MOLES here? One person, the same guy. Well, I will summarize that because we're kind of late. So PECs and MOLES are a testing framework provided by Microsoft Research. There are two parts in this framework, Microsoft PECs and Microsoft MOLES. PEX is an add-in to Visual Studio, so you can use it without Visual Studio as well, that allow you to generate testing function. We call that white box testing. So it will create function that will provide parameters to your code. Example. Let's illustrate that. Yeah, for information, it's free. You can download it from MSDN or from Microsoft Research website. And the good information, I don't know if it's that good information, but it has been created by a Belgian, Peli de Halle, from Université Catholique de Louvain. And documentation is provided as well, very nice documentation. So let's take a look at what PEX does, and then later on I will illustrate moles in the context of SharePoint. First, I will take a very simple project called PEX. Yes. This one is okay. Let's remove this. And in this project, I have one basic class called password. And in this class, I have different functions. And here I need to make sure that my password is strong. So I provide three functions. Is strong, you provide a string, you check if you have less than 8 characters, the password is not strong, otherwise it's strong. So that's one implementation. I have another one, I check if the password is really strong, just pass a string. It checks if you have a certain number of uppercase, of non-alpha characters, etc. I have another implementation as well, where you pass a business entity, and you check the business entity value. So code is quite simple for the demo. But now, if you want to test that, if you want to use unit tests in your application, you need to be able to have a high code coverage. You need to make sure that your code covers most situations, right? At least you need to reach almost 100% code coverage. So you just install PEX on your computer, and then this menu will show up in Visual Studio, Run PEX. So Run PEX will analyze your code. For instance, let's do that, Run PEX on isStrong. And we'll try to find all the situations that could break. That's what we call white box testing. It analyzes the code and provides some suggestion about what could potentially break. So PEX is running in the background here. It takes a while to run PEX. For instance, here you see three situations. If I pass nil to my function, it breaks. If you click here, you see password is nil. I get an exception, so you can get more information about what went wrong. Because PEX generates code for you. So, for instance, if you do this, is strong and you pass nil, you get an exception. Okay? Other example here, if you pass an empty string, the application will return nil, will return false. This will return true. If I take the other implementation here, is really strong, you run PEX on it, run PEX. Okay, so it generates the following case, and for each case you have code. And the good news is you can copy and paste the code to your test project if you want. So it checks this situation, for instance, here. What if I pass this? You see? If I pass this, why four numbers? I think because we check somewhere if we have less than four. Less than three. So it check what if I pass four characters. So it really analyzes your code. So the good news is all these test functions can be reused in your unit test. So for instance, I can do this. I can say, that is good, but I want to be able to save that, to integrate that in my unit test application. So let's run that again, run PEX. Or let's say I want to create a test project. It's running. It's running in the background. It's a beta version, so it's still in beta. But it's going to use in most Microsoft applications And it's free, by the way. Okay, so let's do this. I want to create a test project. We call that a parameterized unit test. So let's create a project. Okay. And I want to name this project demo community. Okay, so the project is being created. And now when you run, for instance, when you run PEX again, it generated testing function. And you can select the function you want to integrate in your unit tests application. Okay, 17 functions. So let's grab a few of them. So you can say, this one and this one, I want to promote that. So I want to save that in my unit test project. Okay. Then it's saved. Yeah, it's working. And normally all these cases are saved here, you see, in your test project. So now you have a test project, a unit test project. Set a startup here, and you can say I want to run this unit test. Okay. So you can also use that in SharePoint, in SharePoint 2010 if you want. So you say all these tests pass. That's okay. But when you create unit tests, what does unit test mean? Unit test means you will kind of isolate your code also from the external application. So if you want to create unit tests in SharePoint, you need to isolate your code against the SharePoint itself. So you need to make an abstraction of SharePoint, right? Because you don't want to test SharePoint. SharePoint works very well, thank you. But we want to test just the business logic, right? If you don't do that, that's not a unit test. It's an integration test. We can also do integration tests in SharePoint. Huh? We can do integration tests in SharePoint now that we have Service Pack 1 in Visual Studio, because Service Pack 1 in Visual Studio support the .NET Framework 2.5. So now we can, but you need Service Pack 1. But what if you want to do real unit tests? So you need to detour to abstract SharePoint itself, the SharePoint API itself. So we can do that, and that's the role of MOL. So MOL here, MOL is a way to mock SharePoint object, well, any kind of .NET object, including SharePoint object. So how does that work? Let's take a look at the demo. Again, I have a simple example. First, concept. Basic concept without SharePoint, and then I will explain how that works in SharePoint. Here, if you want to, in your test project, you want to do this. You want to simulate the fact that you are year 2000, for instance. So you need to be able to do that. Datetime.now is new datetime 2000, 1st January. You want to simulate that in your unit test application. So you cannot do that because in C Sharp and in .NET, in the .NET framework, now is read-only. Okay? So what we want is we want to be able to provide our own behavior of datetime just for this situation. Okay, so to do this, you need to detour the default .NET implementation. And you can do that in Visual Studio by selecting the DLL you want to be able to detour, right-click, and add MOL assembly. Then MOL will generate a new assembly, provide a detour. Example here, I did it. And automatically, all the .NET class in this DLL, in the .NET Framework DLL, have another implementation which has a name starting with M, M like MOL. So instead of having datetime, I will have a M datetime. And you can say, hey, okay, the get, the know implementation. So the know, so when you grab the know value, huh, we have a naming pattern here, is the know get. So anytime a user will call know in his application, I want this to be replaced with my own code. So afterward, if you call datetime know, then you will get this. You see, because the implementation replace just for this the Microsoft code with your own custom one. And that works very well. Okay? So you don't change that in your application. You change that in your test application, of course. And this is the test project. And you can run your test project if you want. So for instance, here, I will get this exception if I run my unit test. Well, hopefully. So if you understand this concept of detouring, then we can apply that to SharePoint, because we can detour any SharePoint class with your own code. For instance, here, test fail, and the exception was, if you click here, you'll get, don't get the detail, it's maybe below. Usually I should get Y2 key error. Anyway, I know it comes from here, because when you click here, you are redirected directly here. So we have changed datetime class behavior. So in SharePoint, we can do the same. If you want to abstract the SharePoint API, so let's go here. I'm going to use this one. For instance, if I have a event receiver in SharePoint, so I have the following event receiver. You see, item adding, so I want to be able to test that. So in item adding, you pass a SharePoint object. So to use that, you need a SharePoint DLL, of course. And here, in this event handler, I call this update title. And I grab the property, and I do something with this object. So in update title, I get the website, I get the list, and I change some information in the list. So you need to be able to abstract the SharePoint code and to focus on the business logic. So we can do that by using MOL. This is my test code, you see. And you can say this. Anytime I'm using the SP site class in my code, I want this to be replaced. I want this to behave as not implemented. So if for any reason you call the SharePoint code, you'll get an exception, which means you need to replace the SharePoint code with your own code. For instance, the SP site constructor will be replaced with this, you see. So you create a mole object of SPSite. So in SPSite, you have an open web method, so you can replace the open web method with your own implementation, etc., etc. So doing this requires a lot of code, you see, because you need to create your own behavior, but you need to write code. That's a lot. It's very expensive. So Microsoft provides basic implementation of SharePoint classes with in-memory list, for instance, and we call that behaviors. So I will illustrate that. So a behavior is an implementation of a mole class. So if I get here, behavior, I will show you the same example with behaviors. So that's the same code you see here. You can say this, as before. Please, I don't want to use the SharePoint code for SPSite. But here, the SPSite constructor will be this one, will be this, so instantiate an SPSite. SPWeb, I will create, when you call an SPWeb, do this, so I will create an SPWeb that will be in the root. You want a list, so I want to create a list that will be in memory. I want one list, is this one. In this list, I want the following fields, three fields, one called content type, the other one called title, etc., etc. So if basic implementation, that's run in memory. And that's good, because you won't invoke the SharePoint API from your unit test. You know that if you want some unit, your unit tests to be integrated in continuous integration, they must be fast. So you cannot afford to invoke the SharePoint API. So you need to abstract that. So we do that at ING as well for SharePoint projects. So that works. Okay, so this illustrates PECs and moles. Okay, so you can download behaviors, so implemented classes on anything. So you have behavior for the SharePoint API, you have behavior for the link to SharePoint classes as well. So I recommend you this stuff. Okay. Okay, so conclusion are that if you want to be able to test your application, you need to be able to follow patterns. So the patterns I demonstrated before are interesting because first, everybody follow the same pattern, so it's easy to manage code written by other person, but also it's easier to test your application because you can isolate, you can easier isolate code. You can isolate the model, you can isolate the view model, for instance, etc. So that you need to follow a layered approach, follow patterns. Accustom yourself with the SPG. You'll find a lot of information in the SharePoint pattern and practice, a lot of implementation. Okay, I've learned a lot of things, especially in links to SharePoint. Don't forget that upgrading feature in SharePoint is super important, okay? And that can be tricky. In SharePoint 2010, we have a new event that allows you to upgrade your features. That's the feature upgrading event. So learn this event. Make sure you fully understand this. That's super important, especially when you have to upgrade content type or list based on existing content type and you want to change some existing field, for instance. That's kind of tricky, so that we show you how to do that. Use Microsoft PECs to reduce number of unit tests. Use moles to isolate your code from the SharePoint API and to make continuous integration much faster. And don't forget that one day or another, your code might run in the cloud. So make sure that today you use the correct API because not all classes can run in the cloud in SharePoint 2010. Okay. So making sure your code must be able to run in the cloud should be part of your governance plan. Okay, so that's very important.